Welcome to Fermentality. I'm your host, Kat Pierce with Atlantic Brew Supply, and we're homebrewers talking homebrew and sharing fermentation. Welcome, everyone. Today, our guest is Mark Burris. Mark is from Raleigh, North Carolina, and has been an Atlantic Brew Supply customer for 6 years. Welcome, Mark.
Hey, glad to be here.
So, obviously, first and foremost, I would just like to learn a little bit more about you. So, what do you do for a living? Obviously, like, making mead is your hobby, but, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm an IT executive here in Raleigh, working for the government. I do nothing in my professional life that has anything to do with brewing or fermentation. In fact, I'm the complete opposite because I have zero creativity. But those are areas and skills that I'd like to learn and get better at. I'm a completely analytical IT guy at heart. And I got into brewing about 6 years ago. In fact, a guy, David here, helped me and my girlfriend out when we were looking at figuring out what to do. I thought in the beginning I wanted to brew beer, but then I quickly realized that I didn't like to cook.
Or clean. Cleaning
but then we were downtown at Clouds Brewing, and they had Bee Nectar on tap, and they had a tap takeover, and the guys from Bee Nectar were there, and we're trying out. I was like, I really like this. This is what I want to do. Mm-hmm. Came here 6 years ago, talked to a guy, a short little guy named David, who worked behind the bar, was very, behind the bar, behind the counter. And he knew what he was talking about, walked us through some things, and that kind of got me started on my journey. Now, I also did this to help with my career, believe it or not, because I'm a guy who likes to shoot from the hip and get things done. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, brewing, especially brewing mead, takes patience. I need to learn patience.
My grandmother has always said, I have all the patience in the world God has ever gave me, which is because I've never used any of it. And essentially, that's why the first mead that I made, because I also have no patience, just like my grandmother. And so I called it mead for patience. So you got into it because you like to get things done and you enjoyed the process of that.
Yeah, that and I also like to, when I do anything, I have a lot of hobbies. You know, I do 3D printing, I do aquaponics, I build solar generators and do all kind of really cool stuff. But I like to learn the science behind it. So the biggest thing I wanted to know with the mead is why. When I do things, why am I doing it? That was my biggest question as I'm going through this mead making journey, was the why. Why do you put this in here? Why do you do this? Why do you do that? Because I want to know. I don't want to just put a recipe together and then come out with a product. I want to know when I do something, why did I do that?
Right.
Also, because it helps me when things go wrong. Oh, I should have done that, and that's why. And that's why this is wrong.
Right. Absolutely. So what was it, obviously you talked to us about how you got involved with mead making. What was it about mead making that made you continue to do it 6 years later?
Well, I'm also the type of guy who likes to do things that many other people don't. Mm-hmm. All my friends brew beer. I have a lot of friends who brew beer, and they brew really good beer. And I can buy also really good beer. Can't go and buy a lot of meads. You can't go to a grocery store and find a shelf, a mountain of shelves of mead. You might be able at a bottle shop to find one or two on a shelf or maybe a half rack. So I wanted to do something that someone else wasn't doing, and I wanted to do it well.
Right.
So that was the key, just to do something others weren't doing, kind of be the trendsetter. And to see if we can bring mead up into the same classification as ciders, wines, and beers.
Excellent. Well, we have a couple of meads here that I have made, so I want to get your feedback on that. And then we have one that you actually made here in the shop because you taught a mead class. So the one that you made in the shop is actually the lightest one, I guess I would say. So we'll go ahead and start with that one before we move on to our next question. But tell us a little bit about what we did with this particular mead. I believe we used orange blossom honey, right? I mean, it's just a straight up mead.
Yeah, it's a straight up mead. There was nothing special about it other than the love we put into it. We used 71B or D47?
I think we used 71B.
So 71B.
Or no, we used D47.
Oh, D47, yeah.
And then recommended for beginners to use 71B.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people love D47 from the Lavalin. I think it gives you problems sometimes, and 71B is a nice, easier starter one for me. But yeah, so again, it was just the honey, water, and yeast. But as we went through the class, we talked more about the process, what to do, and again, the why. Why did we do this? You know, rather than just, here's your list of ingredients, put it in, shake it up, put it on the shelf, come back in a month.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about process. We talked about the whys. We talked about what goes into making successful mead and what can make your mead not turn out well.
Yeah. So one of the things that I will tell you is, it's a good thing that I'm not a professional brewer because I would be a horrible cellarman. I do not. I am somebody that I would much prefer set it and forget it. But there was some piece of advice that you had given us about yeast nutrient. What is it specifically that you would recommend for like beginners in regards to yeast nutrient? Like, would you just go straight ahead and add all of the yeast nutrient at the beginning for a beginner, or would you still recommend doing step additions?
So my personal preference, again, like everything else in the world out there, there are left side, right side, up, down, middle ground. You know, everyone has their own opinion and their own experience on what they've done. What I found is that step feeding and using what's called the Tosna protocol has worked the best from what I've tried. And I've tried different ones. I've tried lumping it all in. I've tried these. But I think if you think of it from a scientific standpoint, step feeding it is the best way to go.
Right.
You're just gradually adding it as needed. And then there's a point where then you stop. And the goal of any good fermentation, whether it's mead, beer, wine, cider, is keeping the yeast happy.
Absolutely.
Because what do the yeast do? They eat the sugar, they piss out alcohol, and they fart CO2.
Yep.
And if you don't give them a good diet, then they don't digest well and create things that may not go well in your world. So again, keeping the yeast happy. And that's why, you know, I don't get fed once a day. I like to eat three times a day. So, you know, using some of that logic. And again, to me, there's never a right answer. It's like math. There's probably a bunch of different ways to get to the end goal successfully. So, but in my world, this is what I found to be the most successful.
Awesome. So this one, I'm definitely getting it's because it's just standard straight mead. I'm definitely getting a little more of that floral character from the orange blossom. And as compared to other yeasts that I've used in mead before, this is the first time that I use the 71B. Mm. And it's really clean, surprisingly.
Yeah.
I've used, I don't remember what the last one was, but I do remember like, We've talked about doing Kvike, right?
Oh,
like
yeah.
I did a mead with Kvike, and it just came out super, super citrusy. Like, it was so robust of a fermentation that all that you got was essentially the flavor from the honey. But this one's a lot more balanced. And, you know, just for a straight up mead, there's nothing to hide behind. And I think that's what I particularly like about it.
And that's the hardest mead to make, I think, in my personal opinion, is a traditional.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can, like carpentry, you can't hide things with trim and caulk and paint. You know, it's all what it is. There's nothing to add to it. If it comes out wrong, it's wrong.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unless you're going to add something to make it something else. So, you know, you make a blueberry mead, you can use the blueberries to hide maybe some imperfections with the ferment process of what you've done. But yeah, traditional, I think, is by far the hardest mead to make because it's naked.
Right. So you've obviously done traditional meads before, you know, naked meads before, but you also are a big enthusiast on trying all different kinds of flavors, all different kinds of honey. What motivated you to essentially be like, I'm going to do every single potential flavor there is out there? And more specifically, what have you tried that turned out really well that you were actually surprised about?
So I think I was inspired by a friend of mine, John Talkington, who runs Brimminghorn Meadery up in Delaware. And I grew up in Delaware. So, this guy is a genius when it comes to putting ingredients together. And some of the things I've tasted at his shop were just, and they were combinations I would have never thought of in a million years. And those combinations were just perfect. And again, as I said, I have zero creativity, so I try to leverage what other people are making, and I try to understand the science behind it to see what may pair well together. So I think he was my biggest inspiration on what you can do with ingredients and how you can put things together. And again, on the other side of that, I'm also a YOLO. But what do I got in the fridge or freezer? What do I have laying around? I made an orange walnut coriander.
Oh, wow.
And it turned out really good. The coriander was a YOLO. Why? I had it. Didn't realize that was like a, isn't it like a citrusy, nutty spice?
Yeah.
So when I looked at it, it actually kind of worked, but I didn't research it and I should have. But it just, again, the YOLO method sometimes works.
Didn't you do like some sort of taco mead? See, I was really surprised about that taco mead when you brought it in.
I also do.
Because it literally tasted like nachos.
I also do meads on a dare. Someone said there's no way you can ferment salsa. It's like, challenge accepted. So what I did was I made a mead with tomato, onions, blueberries, jalapenos, and yeah, pretty much every ingredient you would put in the salsa except cilantro. I hate cilantro. And then I brewed it up, fermented, and it turned out really well. And it was the weirdest thing ever because it's a mead, so I like my stuff a little sweeter. So the gravity was around 10-20-ish, so it had some good sweetness to it. When you crack the thing open, you smell nachos.
Yeah.
And then you taste it, and you get this weird savory, sweet flavor that's actually surprisingly good. So.
Yeah, when you brought that in, I think that was like the first time that I had met you, and you came in and said, "Yeah, by the way, I've got a nacho mead," and I'm going, "You have a what?" And what was interesting for me is, you know, tasting it, I felt like, because, you know, your brain associates, you know, all of those, you know, vegetable flavors that you were speaking of, like, yep, you know, tomato, onion, cilantro, all of that jazz with nachos. For some reason, I felt like I was tasting tortilla chips, you know, and it's just weird how your brain and how sensory can do that to you. Yeah. At times, you know, I mean, of course, everybody's got a different palate, and sure, and I think a lot of the reason for that is because people come from different backgrounds. We all have a different worldview. Therefore, we have a different experience in the things that we've tasted, things we like, things that we don't.
Completely agree.
And so it's just really entertaining to have you come in and bring all of these like wild needs.
But again, it ties into the thing I told you in the beginning. I like to do things that nobody else does.
Yeah.
I'll put ingredients, I'll make something. You see on the shelf everywhere, you've got X, Y, and Z. All of these IPAs are the same. All these other beers are the same. In the mead worlds, it's kind of the same. You stick to what you know. Because I'm a home brewer and I don't have to follow rules like commerce.
Right.
I can just make what I want.
So my next question for you then, so you talk about how you had a lot of friends that brew beer and you enjoy sharing it with other people. Mm-hmm. So are you a part of a homebrew club?
I am. I'm part of the Garner Ale Society.
Oh, awesome.
Bunch of guys down there. They're great guys, brew some great beer. And I honestly, I had an ulterior motive joining the group. I like making mead. I've even made some beers and some ciders and even some wines. My ultimate goal was to learn more about the beer making process, to see how maybe I can blend that into the meads, because a lot of people don't like meads because they're not only their perception is it's just sweet, but sometimes there's no balance. You know, if you've ever drank a Coca-Cola that was flat, mm-hmm, what does it taste like? Ugh.
Syrup.
It's like, ugh. But yet the addition of carbonic acid or carbonating it gives you that nice salty-ish peppery bite, which balances out. And I think that's what I is missing from the mead world, and what we can do sometimes. Traditional meads and those things are great, and I love them. But again, I want to use my knowledge and influence and see
how far can you push that boundary?
Yeah, yeah. How can I blend the hops addition to the beginning of meads to balance out the sweetness? And that's where my beer group comes in. Now, they're also getting to learn something from me, because we every time we go to the meeting, we talk, we converse, we talk about different processes. And they're also jealous that I don't have to cook.
So, yeah, and it doesn't take nearly as long to put together. It's funny, my one of my store associates, Joel, he, you know, has really gotten into making mead since your class. Good. And, you know, he'll buy some honey from us and then, you know, take it home. And he's like, yeah, I got to put together this mead tonight. And I'm going, you're doing that after work? Are you crazy? But I forget mead, you know, it takes maybe an hour and a half. It's, you know, it's not that bad, but you know, myself, I'm going, nah, man, I need a whole weekend. Give me a whole weekend if I'm going to ferment.
Well, let's just be honest. 90% of all brewing, no matter what it is cleaning.
Yeah. And I hate cleaning. There's a reason my fiance gets frustrated when I invite people to come over to brew. Normally, like if I'm just brewing by myself, you know, he can help me clean up and, you know, keep things clean as we go. But, you know, you invite other people who are drinking beer and eating food. And then on top of that, you know, brewing a beer, he's like, oh, because he knows he's going to get stuck cleaning. Like I said, I would be a terrible cellarman. So awesome. Yeah, actually, I went to a Garner Ale Society meeting last week over at Bearded Lady and had a lot of fun. There were a lot of really good beers that were brought to the table. And I learned a lot, you know. Yeah. And I mean, you know, sure, I've got a certified Cicero and I just took my BJCP test. Like, I'm really into beer, but, you know, I still have a lot to learn, especially more specifically about home brewing. And it's really cool to be able to go to the different homebrew clubs in the local area and learn more about it. You know, I'm just obsessed with sensory. I'm not necessarily obsessed with, I mean, I'm obsessed with brewing, but you get the point.
Yes.
So speaking of making mead and how it's a little bit shorter, tell us about your setup at home. You know, what is it that you have at home in order to make mead?
So, and honestly, I keep it simple. You know, I don't have this major setup with these steel vessels and whatever. I keep it simple. I've got glass carboys. I still ferment in the Spiegel plastic-ish buckets only because I need some of the big wide mouth, because if you ever try to clean that stuff up or get things out, you need a wide mouth when you ferment.
Mm-hmm.
I use simple racking tools, racking canes, and I guess my only elaborate part of my setup is when I bottle. I build a little CO2 system to bottle. So I'll actually keg the meads when they're ready to go, and I'll bottle it from the kegs. That way I can kind of time when I want to do this. But I typically, you know, there's nothing really special about my setup other than space. You know, I actually have a basement here in Raleigh, which is great for fermenting, great for storage. And, you know, unlike the beer side of it, when I make things, I make bigger batches so that I can put these bottles away and then try them again year after year and see how they age and progress.
Nice. So it's kind of like having your little own cellar in addition to brewery.
Yeah. So I've got about 2,000 bottles down there.
Holy cow.
In addition to about 700 plus pounds of honey. Because remember, the one thing about honey is honey never expires.
Yeah.
It doesn't go bad. It has antibacterial, antimicrobial products, and it'll last, kept properly, like everything else, it will last forever.
So that is very impressive. It's funny because I was at a friend's house the other night, and he was showing me his closet of nothing but sours, you know, like these big bombers, and he's got these, you know, you go to a bottle shop, and they have these racks. Yeah. He like bought those racks specifically for like wine bottles and things like that. And I'm going, holy cow, that's impressive. 2,000 bottles?
At last count, yes.
Wow.
I'd say about 200 or 300 commercial bottles because I'm part of some mead clubs and I'll get mead mail, which we call it. And
mead mail.
Yeah. and you know, because those you get the things you can't buy off the shelf because typically they'll make these for the mead mail customers. So
nice.
Yep.
So then what is one piece of equipment that you can't live without, you know, whether it be like the brewing side, fermentation side, or even storing side?
That's a good one. I don't know if there's one piece. I mean, I can't live without my hydrometer. Because of that, I have no idea where things are. I can't gauge. I mean, there are people who actually make mead and don't use hydrometer. It's not a requirement, but I like to know where things are and where they're at and where they're finished. And I can't live without the space. I mean, I guess it would be the space. I need space to do this. I don't want to try to cram this into other things. When I first started, I did this in my little den area / office. And I eventually got kicked out of there because when I started mixing my nutrients in once, I forgot to degas it to release all the CO2, and I created a little mead Kano. And dumb me, instead of just letting it go on the floor, I decided, no, I'm going to stop this with my hand, which added the pressure.
Oh, no.
And then it went poof on the ceiling. And my girlfriend walks by and she goes, yep, you're moving.
Bye, Felicia. Yeah, it's interesting. So we ended up having a mead here that was just sitting out on the counter. And we hadn't opened it in a while. And there was maybe, you know, like about 10 ounces left in the liter Easy Cap bottle. Yeah. And Joel and I, every now and then, will say, I think it's time for an attitude adjustment. In other words, let's have a quick shot of mead. And so we opened up this bottle, and all of a sudden it just went, poof, and a cloud of CO2 just appeared. And we're going, what the hell? We didn't add anything to this. We didn't, you know, stop the fermentation or anything. So yeah. We're pretty sure that it just started re-fermenting. And then, like, it's hilarious because this particular mead, we weren't the biggest fan of. We didn't like the honey that we used because it came across as too, like, musty, you know? And so, anyway, with the carbonation, though, it was fantastic. So yeah, it was one of those things where we were just super surprised, and we went to tell the story to Matt, the head brewer at Raleigh Brewing, and he says, oh yeah, you got to be very careful with that. This is the reason why I don't particularly like to add puree to things. Because apparently there was a point in time in which he was in his apartment and had gone to sleep, but there was a bottle of mead there that he had added puree to like make a melomel or something. And he woke up to something sounding like a gunshot, and he looked up and there was a piece of glass literally inside of the drywall right above his head.
Nice.
And he says, yeah, so a mead once almost killed me. And we're going, holy shit. So,
yeah, can you imagine a police report on that? Mead, in quotes. Uh-huh, sure.
So, speaking of carbonating mead, you know, I have been looking at potentially, you know, I was telling you earlier when we first started that I have this mead that I made that I only did 2 pounds per gallon because I wanted it to be super dry. It came out super dry, but unfortunately, I think it came out too dry. And I put it in Easy Cap bottles already. So I'm trying to decide whether or not, like, I want to add some juice to it, maybe to, like, bring up some fruitiness or potentially carbonate it. I haven't killed off the yeast yet. So if I wanted to carbonate it, do you think it would still be okay for me to just go ahead and add some carbonation tablets to it?
I don't think carbonation tablets would do anything to it. I mean, it depends on, again, I don't have a lot of experience using carbonation tablets, but I thought, If I'm thinking right, carbonation tablets are just sugar.
Right.
And they kick off the re-fermentation process.
It's essentially just priming sugar.
So there are too many factors to wonder about that. If the yeast is at tolerance, you know, it won't be able to eat the, you know, so there's a lot of factors there. I mean, I don't
especially
think,
if it's dry.
Yeah. And if it's dry, I don't think carbonation is the way to go on it. If you want to add something to it, because it's dry, now you're going to make it even drier with carbonation.
Yeah. Well, see, I'm like, I'm at the point where I'm like, man, if it's dry, we might as well kind of get like a champagne kind of thing going.
Yeah. I mean, what I would do is if you want some more of the honey flavoring characteristics, I would just blend a little bit of just a little bit of honey back into it. You'd be surprised at how much a little honey goes a long way.
Mm-hmm.
Or what I've done, if I want to keep it dry and I don't want to add any sugar, there are a lot of great sweeteners out there, flavored sweeteners that work really well. I'm trying to remember the ones we get from Whole Foods, or not Whole Foods, but World Market over there. Amoretti does some really good things. And at the very least, if there's a certain adjunct you want, there are a bunch of just off the shelf. You got them behind you, Horton. I use some of those all the time to increase the flavor profile. So it just depends on what you want to grab out of it. What you think it's lacking, and what do you want to add to it? If it's just too dry, you don't like it, and you want to add a flavor to it, yeah. There's a bunch of the no sugar, or there's a bunch of Amoretti, Horton, and all those outlets you can add to it. But the coolest thing I like to do is I like to try it. If I have a mead like that and I don't know what to do is, I'll break it up into little samples and I drop different flavors in it to see what happens. Hell, add some scorpion peppers to it. Give it a kick.
Oh, that's a good idea. So my fiance and I, we are really big pepper growers. Mm-hmm. I don't actually like eating peppers, but they're so much fun to grow. It's like they're my little babies. And so typically at the end of the summer, you know, pepper plants are supposed to just die, just kind of like tomato plants. And so instead of letting them die, we take them inside mm-hmm. and put a grow light over it. And so we've got 2-year-old habanero plants, some scorpions. I think we also have Thai chili peppers. So that's, I hadn't thought about doing a spicy mead. That's brilliant.
Yeah. I do a scorpion mead, pepper mead, but the honey I use Zambian wildflower.
Very nice.
So, and that turns out because of the savoriness of the honey and then the peppers makes a nice good traditional with some heat to it. But speaking of grow lights, you laugh. I actually in my basement, in my area, the plants that I bring in, one of my plants that I brought in is a pineapple plant. So someone said, you can't grow pineapples in North Carolina. I said,
hold
my beer. I cut that bottom off, last pineapple I bought in July. I put it in a bucket. I put the top in a little grower and that damn thing started growing.
I have a friend whose mom started doing that. She lives in Sayulita, Mexico, which is West Coast, like near Puerto Vallarta. Yeah. And they get pineapples there all the time. And so she's like, I wonder what happens, and did it. And now she's got this pineapple growing. I'm like, hell
yeah. Have you ever seen what happens? A pineapple just grows out of the middle of the plant.
Yeah.
Like,
bloop. So, well, speaking of sampling, let's open up another mead. All right. We had this guy bring in some vanilla and pumpkin spice mead earlier. Ooh. I'm really in love with this vanilla.
Ooh.
He said he did it over the vanilla beans. I think he said like 3 vanilla beans for 1 gallon. Anyway, it's like super smooth. He said it kind of reminds him of like the aftertaste of like coffee creamer. So
I don't know if you can actually put too much vanilla in. I don't know. I mean, I guess you could. I guess you can put too much of anything.
It might get solventy. I don't know.
Yeah.
But from what I know, he used Tahitian vanilla beans. Okay. So.
Ooh. Yeah. Smooth. It's nice.
Very well done. So we have a decent amount of mead makers in the local area, and I think that a lot of it also needs to be attributed to one of our previous store managers, Delphine.
Yeah.
She came through and essentially just reinvigorated the mead making classes and all of that jazz, which, you know, is how you, I think, ended up getting more involved with the shop and doing educational opportunities. But
I remember the first time meeting her, she was like, you make mead? I'm like, yes. She's like, oh, another one. Yay.
So speaking of Delphine, there have been a couple, as I've gone through the back, like hop and yeast refrigerator there, she's left a couple of like meads throughout the shop before she left. And, you know, she came into the shop at one point in time and said, you know, you've got a couple of meads around here. Did you want us to like bottle them for you and give them to you? And she says, no, you guys drink it. It's all good. Or at least she told one of my store associates, Lottie, this.
Yeah.
And so we found one recently when we were making room for a homebrew competition where people were going to be dropping it off. I don't know that it was Delphine's, but with as good as it tastes, it wouldn't surprise me. Okay. So I'm going to open this one up as well. And I'm curious to hear what you think is in it.
Okay.
Poof. Got to do that right next to the microphone so that we get that nice boom sound.
Be funny if this wasn't one of Delphine's, it was one of mine hidden in the back.
Oh, I mean, you know, it wouldn't surprise me either. So, like, maybe
because I've always left much stuff back here every time it comes. So it'd be hilarious.
Well, this one,
because I have a lot of those bottles, which is funny.
Yeah, the ice wine bottles. Yeah, this one was completely filled when we got it, so it wasn't opened yet.
And someone stole my little bottle idea, my little Tabasco bottle.
Oh yeah,
you get them off Amazon real cheap, and they're the great testers.
Yeah, yeah. And we do sell some of the like hot sauce bottles here.
Oh, you do? Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're back there. They're just from Uline, so you know. This one, oh, I'm not going to say anything. I'll let you taste it.
Let's taste it and we'll figure it out.
She be strong.
Yeah, because I was trying to figure out, is that the heat from the alcohol, or is there a little like peppery heat in there?
I'm getting more of like a yeast phenolic than a like a peppery, so I think it might be like, you know, clove, white pepper type thing, kind of like a Belgian yeast.
A pepper, I'm getting a pepper. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it's not very, but it's like right in the back where I would typically get my like my jalapeno or big heat. So
yeah, but what's interesting about this one is I'm getting a little bit of maple, so it
caramel,
kinda,
thinking, yeah, something around that area. This might be one of hers because she was talking about there's this maple mead she made, this maple syrup mead. I can't remember what it was, but I remember her talking about it one day.
I think that's what this might be because it's so mapley.
Yeah.
Matt will have to give you some. I'm chatting right now with our production assistant or production manager or whatever you want to call it. We don't really have a name for him yet, but Matt is here, you know, hanging out with us. And so that's who I'm speaking to. Anyway. All right. Well, my next question for you. So we already talked about like what yeast you would recommend for like new folks getting into the hobby. But talk to us more specifically about chlorine, you know, with mead. So I will say, I think the first mead that I made, I forgot to get Camden tablets and I ended up just making it at home. But tell us about chlorine and what is your preferred method?
Well, I don't think it's chlorine in general. I mean, obviously, like I was talking about in the beginning, feeding the yeast and keeping them happy is the most important thing. And what's the purpose of chlorine in water? To kill things.
Right.
You know, so obviously, not having chlorine in there is probably an optimal thing to do. Problem is, in certain areas, you know, you talk about the tablets. Remember, in these areas, they use chlorine, chloramine, and with the shortage, they actually boosted up the ammonia back in about 6 months ago here in Raleigh. How I find out, my koi started dying.
Oh, no.
Yeah, because we were filling the pond, and we're like, so we tested the water, and we're like, ammonia?
And koi are not cheap.
No, no. And we have big, like 16, 20-inch plus koi. So
Holy cow.
They're huge, yeah. So anyway, so water is very important. Now, granted, I've run water out of Raleigh tap, and had zero issues with it. Straight out, into, let it roll and let it go, and the yeast have not had a problem with it yet. But process, again, that's one of my problems with making mead. Sometimes I just shoot from the hip, and I got to follow a process, be patient, do this, do right. But again, I think, you know, the better quality your water, I think the better quality mead you have. And if you have any weird off flavors, they could be contributed to the excess amounts of chlorine in water. Again, I've used Raleigh water many times, not had much of a problem with it. Of course, you will have to keep an eye on those times where they will flood the system with chlorine because they do that once or twice a year to flush the pipes out. So,
right.
But it's something you should think about, and it's something you should probably do something about with Camden tablets or it used to be you could fill up a jug of water, like a 5, 6, 7 gallon vessel,
right,
and let it sit for 24 hours and the chlorine would dissipate. Problem is, they use other chemicals other than chlorine, I think chloramine or whatever, which doesn't really dissipate anymore.
Yeah.
in airs or over time. So, again, just...
Would you recommend maybe getting like a Brita filter or something like that?
But will a Brita filter really cut out what you need to do?
I mean,
I have a whole house filter, so it does help, but it's only 1 micron, so it cuts out some, but not all.
Right.
If you're really worried about that kind of water, that kind of issue in what you're making, depending on the size of your batch, just go to Walmart or Food Line and grab one 1 gallon jug of thing, or have it fill, go fill their big 5 gallon jug up and bring it home.
My favorite thing is to steal water from the CLT from Raleigh Brewing.
Well, if I had that access, my truck would be backing up here too. I'd be like, hey, I got this 50 gallon jug. Can you hook me up?
I mean, typically I'm just taking like a couple of gallons at a time. It's not that big of a deal, but
I mean, it is important. I think it's something that should be addressed, but it's not the end all be all of it. It's something that has to be done. Mm-hmm. Especially when you're first starting out. To me, you have other things to learn and worry about
than the chlorine
in the water. I mean, like I said, you got to look at everything. But it'd be interesting to do a study and do. See, I like playing around. So it'd be interesting to do two meads exactly the same, and run one through like a some sort of reverse osmosis filtered system that strips everything out, or one from tap. Because the other thing I also think about is, there's also other minerals and things in tap water that I think are beneficial. So if you want to strip stuff out, I'd really want to get rid of the chlorine, but not all the other stuff that may be.
Yeah. So it's funny you mentioned reverse osmosis. My fiance and I were talking, I think actually last week, about like, okay, what can we do for something that's not going to be overtly expensive to put this in our house, you know? So my next question for you is, what is the biggest mistake that you have made and what did you learn from it?
Well, you heard the volcano on the ceiling. trying to stop a mead explosion? No, that doesn't work.
At least you were home for that.
Yeah. I've made a lot of mistakes. And there's no biggest mistake. I mean, I think whenever you make a mistake and you ruin a batch, that's a big mistake because you're like, I got to just dump this now. Mm-hmm. What am I going to do? manhandle my hydrometers, just clunk, drop it in, crack. Oh, darn.
I have two hydrometers at all times for that reason.
I think my biggest mistake is just being impatient or drinking while I'm brewing. because then I make more of my mistakes get compounded because I may forget to do something as I'm rolling through.
But you can't like not drink when homebrewing. Like that's
I'm not disagreeing with you, but but
maybe having a little too much.
But you want a consistent product, I guess, and maybe that's another reason I like mead, because I shoot from the hip a lot, and consistency is not really relevant. Think of it this way: I can make this same mead today, a year from now, using the exact same process. Even the exact same honey from the exact same farm, and it'll be different. Because those bees, you can't tell them where to go pick their floral from. You know, they just go grab whatever. And even though you're getting wildflower honey, you're getting wildflower plus whatever. And I think that's why the brewing culture and the brews that have popped up and all these home brewers, I think that's why everything is going so well, because it's not the same thing. I'm not going and grabbing a Bud Light every Friday. You know, everything I make is going to be consistently a little different, because of the nuances of some of these ingredients just naturally changing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you could even say the same thing for grain.
Yeah.
You know, and hops, you know, the just crops as a whole change depending upon the season that year and the, you know, weather and, you know, just about everything. So I think that's one of the cool things about, you know, brewing as a whole though, or even cooking, is just that, you know, you're never going to be able to make the exact same thing every single time, and that's completely okay. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, my father's an arborist, right? So his favorite thing is to be able to look at the rings and be like, oh, this is a really rainy season this year, you know, or this was a really dry season, or it looks like it might have had a little bit of sickness at this point, but look, it became so healthy that, you know, the next following couple of years. And so to me, it's just interesting to be able to go back and try, you know, if you do the same recipe every year, the exact same way, which, like you said, you know, when you're drinking and you're homebrewing at the same time may not always work out, but there's a fun sensory analysis portion of that that I thoroughly enjoy.
But that's again why I like making mead. It will last theoretically a very long time in my basement. So as I make big batches, I can put them away and year after year try them again, and even try them against other batches. Now, again, I got to take into account the aging process and what has happened to that mead. But again, it gives me at least a good baseline to go against. and to see how well the product holds up over time.
Yeah, absolutely. So what have you brewed recently that you're really proud of?
I think, well, obviously the my rose hips and apricot mead that won one of those Charlotte brew competitions. I was very proud of that one.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was kind of a YOLO too. I had no idea what a rose hip was. You know, knew it, and I like apricots. So I figured I'd try them out. And it turned out really well. I'm working on a Hawaiian punch, I'm calling it now. And that, I think that turned out really well. This is actually with honey from Hawaii, and all the ingredients came from Hawaii.
Oh, that is super cool.
I know a guy.
So what about that pineapple that you're growing? Are you going to add that to it?
No, that's not going to be done for a long while. But I'm working on blueberries recently because, you know, we were able to source 400 pounds of blueberries for like 10 cents a pound or something ridiculous.
Good
like
Lord.
That. So I've been working on like blueberry everything.
So actually, I was telling you how Joel, since your class, has really been getting into making mead recently. Mm-hmm. He made one. It was blueberry and basil. Mm-hmm. And he made a simple syrup for the basil. Mm-hmm. And it was gorgeous.
Nice.
I mean, my struggle with basil has always been, or any, you know, herb, has been making it herb forward. And
yep.
he did a beautiful job at it. I mean, he said, I think there's too much basil in this. And I'm going, nah, man, you put, normally there's no such thing as too much basil, but you achieved it. And
yeah.
To me, I thought that was just awesome. But it was also a really gorgeous, like, pink color. And really, really delicious. Speaking of pink colors, I think I had mentioned this to you a couple months ago. I saw on Reddit that there is a person that made a peppermint, like a candy cane mead, and it came out pink. And it was like really cloudy, which generally when I look at a cloudy mead, I'm like,
Pepto-Bismol, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't that pink.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, I've been getting a couple of people around the homebrewing community to give their insight and how they would do it. You know, some people have been saying, oh, just melt it down. And I'm like, well, it's just going to harden back up. What would you think about essentially taking peppermint candy canes? Or, you know, just a standard, like the peppermint that you get at your grandmother's house, and just pulverizing it and turning it into a powder.
Well, I'm a simple guy.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't even go that far. I'd have just chucked them in the jar and let it go. Because
just the whole peppermint?
Yeah, I just throw the whole sticks in there and let them go.
That's a good point.
They'll, you know, it's like crystallized honey. It will dissolve over time. And if you're making mead, you're not in a hurry.
Yeah,
so,
true.
So time's something you have. So that's what I would have done.
How soon would you pull it off of the peppermint?
Well, the question I would have first is how much would I do in there? Because if it's going to dissolve, you want a good balance.
Right.
So once I figured that out, you wouldn't pull it off because hopefully it would dissolve into there and be part of the must.
Ah, I see what you mean.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So as long as your ratio is not too high, you shouldn't have anything that falls out, I would think.
Mead for patience.
Yes. Yeah. Unless your goal is to act like a tea and you're just going to steep the canes in there and test it periodically,
mm-hmm.
and then pull it off when you get the balance you want. Because if you don't know what you're doing up front, that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, like I said, I've got three herbs at, well, I don't know. Maybe 3 liters, hopefully 4,
yeah.
Of just standard, you know, naked mead, as you like to call it, that I'm looking to do fun things with. So maybe that's what I'll do.
Yeah, just throw them in there, let it sit, taste it periodically to see if it's gotten the flavor profile you want, and then rack it when you're done.
Awesome. So what advice do you have for new homebrewers or folks interested in starting the hobby?
Start with beer. No, I'm kidding. I like the mead game being just a few people. No, I'm kidding. You know, just my biggest thing is why. I like to ask why. It's good to do a little research, find your recipe, figure out what to do, and then follow ingredients like you're making cookies, you know. And then that's fine to start with, but start to ask the questions of why. if you're going to put this in here, well, why am I putting this in here? What's the reason for that? And just do some research and get a consensus of what to do. Don't just read something and say, okay, this is the way to do it, because you'll find out that that dude probably had no idea what they were talking about, because there are good and bad posts all over the internet. So read a bunch, watch some videos, get a good consensus, and look at the spectrum of fermentation. At the end of the day, you, me, everybody else, we're doing the same thing. We are taking a sugar, we're fermenting it with yeast, and we're creating an alcoholic product, whether it's beer, wine, cider, or mead. There may be different pieces in those, but just kind of do some research, figure it out, and ask a lot of questions. Don't be afraid to ask questions. That's a big thing. I see on these forums and Reddit posts all the time where people are like, oh, I'm sorry if this has been asked and asked again. And I'm like, well, if people get pissed off you asking a simple question, they can just leave the post, because yeah. I'm happy to answer
just
the same.
Ignore it.
I'm happy to answer the same question over and over, because people coming in who just don't know. And you can read and not be sure. So maybe this is the way they gain consensus, is to ask the question and see how the 20 people respond, how many are on the same, you know, wavelength. So just ask a lot of questions, do a lot of research, and you know, ask your folks here at ABS. I mean, you guys answered some great questions for me and helped point me down the path of righteousness. So
yeah, well, we've learned a lot from you as well. So I mean, I think that's part of why I enjoy this community so much, is because it really is kind of a community of sharing. And I mean, just like food, I mean, what is alcohol other than a way to bring people together and to foster and facilitate a conversation? And you know, it's generally, you know, when people have a rough day, you know, and if they do consume alcohol, they're like, man, I need a beer, let me see if I can find somebody that'll have a beer with me. And you know, when you're actually getting into making it, you know, and home brewing, it, that same type of community still exists. You know, it's, that's why I like the homebrew club in Fuquay, Holly Springs. They call it half brewers, half drinkers.
Yeah.
Because they want to, you know, foster a community of people that not just enjoy drinking and spending time with one another, but also homebrewing and learning from one another. So yeah, I mean, asking questions is really important.
Well, I really like what you said about the Holly Springs Fuquay group, because that's the truth. The biggest thing I want from what I do is I want feedback, good or bad. So I'd love to have groups that are half drinkers, so that way they can tell me what they think of especially those who maybe not brew.
Assuming they'll be honest with you, you know.
I would hope they'd be honest with me.
Yeah, right.
Of course, you don't have to be honest to see a crinkle on your face like, ugh.
Yeah. yeah, when I brought my own homebrew to people, I do hope that they will give me, you know, honest feedback with kindness. But, you know, it's sometimes it's a struggle finding the right folks that will be honest with you, because they're overly worried about like hurting your feelings.
Well, that's why I like Dave and Todd here too, because, you know, I asked him, I said, look, and please, you know, when you're trying this, be honest with me. He goes, oh, we'll tell you it stinks. Said, oh, good. Thank you. I want that. I want that positive or negative feedback.
Yeah. So. I mean, you know, in the education world, there are teachers that, you know, they consistently have feedback given to them. And I used to be a teacher, so I think I have brought a lot of the respect for getting constructive feedback into my world now, where I'm like a homebrewing. And, you know, I think that's partially why I got into sensory, is because I really appreciate it when people can give me feedback. They can taste something and they're like, this is kind of soy saucy. How was your fermentation? Oh, yeah, it kind of died off a little bit. Well, yeah, this is yeast autolysis. This is why, you know. But I think it's really cool that you can taste something with sensory and be like, oh, this is what happened. Yeah. But my final question for you.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Boy. And this is a fun one.
Before you ask your question, I want to add something in. It just popped in my noodle.
Yeah.
You were talking about the problems and starting out here. I was so new to the process, and I have to bring it up because it's funny as hell. When I got home and made my first mead from the stuff I bought here at ABS, I put together the 1 gallon jug, had it all set up, was ready to go, put the airlock on it, and I'm happy as anything. I checked on it the next day, and I was reading somewhere that says, and you should be seeing bubbles in your airlock. And I'm looking, I'm like, I don't see any bubbles in my damn airlock. How are there supposed to be? And I'm thinking,
there ain't no
why?
Bubbles.
How? Why are there no bubbles? No, there's no water in the airlock. I didn't understand the purpose of the airlock because I didn't ask the why question. Like, how are they going to be published? Is this thing going to come up from the bottom and just... And then I looked and researched, but like, oh, shit.
Oh, that makes sense.
Well, see, again, that's how new and non-understanding of any of what I was when I started. So,
well, when I first was talking about airlock and bubbling, when I first started, there was a yeast that I chose as kind of like slow fermenting, right? Yeah. I think it was just like a SO4, right? And I wasn't anticipating how dare you have your phone go off? This is a professional.
Holy crap, I thought it was on mute.
It's all good. Fail. Now that I think about it, I don't think mine's off either. I'm really surprised.
I thought I had it on mute too. I was like, oh.
So anyway, I was looking at it going after about 24 hours, why is it not bubbling? You know, why is it not bubbling? What's going on? And I went to my, I went to ABS and I was like.
But you had water in it.
Yeah. Well, I did have water in it. And I went to ABS and I was like, y'all, why is it not bubbling? They're like, how long has it been? About 24 hours. They're going, Kat, chill out. Just wait. And sometimes you'll just miss it, right? But, you know, when it did finally start bubbling, I got all excited. I was like, yay, my yeast didn't die. So that also comes back to like not having any patience.
Oh yeah.
I need for patience. If you were a type of honey, what would you be and why?
Oh, honey, 'cause I'm sweet. No. Ooh, that's good. Man, I did not expect that one. It's like I'm in an interview and I'm like, I know all the questions you're going to ask. Not this one. I'm struggling here.
Maybe a mead instead of a honey.
No, I'll go with honey. I'm gonna go with honey. I would probably be a buckwheat honey.
A buckwheat, and why?
And an eastern buckwheat honey.
Oh, okay.
The one that stinks, smells like a dairy farm. Because I'm a little rough around the edges. You know, not everyone likes, you know, not everyone's going to like buckwheat. It's like scotch or whiskey. You know, you don't like that stuff right away. You learn to like it. So yeah, I'm an acquired taste. So I would say buckwheat honey. Because it's unique. It's strong.
Yeah.
And I do have a strong personality. And it takes some getting used to. So there you go. How about that?
I would have to concur with that. It's funny. So the mead that I just poured you, this is the same guy who brought the vanilla. He brought a pumpkin spice one. Now I took the dregs, so you know you get.
Yeah, I saw yours was darker. Stuff. I was like, is this the same thing? you got the bottom.
No, I got the dregs, which I will drink the dregs. I have no problem with drinking the tasty yeasty boys on the bottom.
Well, I guess my problem with this one is going to be I can never be a judge because I'm very hard at being biased or unbiased. Yeah. And I love all things pumpkin. Pumpkin pie, the pumpkin spices. Oh, I just love it. It's great. So.
Is that not incredible?
That's very good. Oh my God. Who is this guy? I like him already.
His last name is Youngblood. Okay. I don't remember his
first
name.
Oh, I like
him
even more.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. God.
And he is kind of a younger dude. Yeah, so.
My last name is Burris. What does that mean? I used to own English brothels or something. I think that's the origin of my name.
Okay, well, at least you don't have... So obviously I go by Kat, but my first name is Catherine and my last name is Pierce. But at least you don't go by Kat and the first initial of your last name is P. So Kat P. You know, everybody here at ABS makes fun of me for that. It's like literally written on the shipping room wall.
Kat P.
Don't call me Kat P. but yeah, so I'm also really big into pumpkin spice, not necessarily because I like actually like pumpkin pie or anything like that. I just happen to like the spice blend.
Spice blend's awesome.
So I made a pumpkin strong ale, a pumpkin spice strong ale, and I wanted to load it up with spice. And so ended up doing a tincture with dark rum and added two habaneros that I cut, and then also some whole clove, whole cinnamon stick, ground nutmeg, and then shredded fresh ginger root, put it into a mason jar, let it sit there for, you know, 3 or 4 days, and then pulled it off. And then I also did a simple syrup with all of the spices minus the habanero.
Nice.
And put it in there, and, you know, this was going to be our recipe of the month with the Atlantic Brew Supply newsletter. And, you know, Todd and I are going through, Todd's our general manager. Todd and I are going through and debating on, you know, what is our recommended dosage for the spice? And he's like, 1 teaspoon. And I'm like, nah, 1 teaspoon for 5 gallons is not enough. But he hates pumpkin spice. So I'm like, all right. You know, we're just going to wait until this beer comes out. And then I'm going to prove to you that this is the correct dosage in order to balance out the heat, because this is really effing hot. And we brought it. It finally got ready and everything. And I put it in front of Todd and I said, try it. And he's like, okay, that's really good.
Yeah, exactly.
So even for somebody that doesn't like pumpkin spice, he was like, very well done, Kat, very well done. And I'm going in the back of my brain, really trying not to say, I told you so. But awesome. Well, you know what? Thank you so much for spending your Monday with us. We really appreciate you stopping by. And I hope that we continue to see you soon. Because I haven't seen you in a hot minute.
Oh, I know. Been busy. But yeah, thanks for having me. It's been great. I mean, I'm glad you all do things like this. You get the word out to the community and kind of let them know what's going on. And, you know, it's great. I love it.
Excellent.
Thanks.
All righty.